It's Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night right here on a Thursday, getting closer and closer to the weekend. It is 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. And remember, you can always find us on the 101.3 ESPN app. Just download us in the iTunes store, or you can find us in Google Play as well. And if you're using an Amazon Echo or a smart speaker talking to Alexa, just ask Alexa, stream WCPV, and there will be all day long, from Golic and Wingo to the Levitard Show to Stephen A. to Will Kane to the Huddle to Champlain Valley Game Night. So thank you for being in. We go up until 7 o'clock, and I am pumped today. It's Thursday. Mariners are getting their clock cleaned by Houston, as I perfectly expected them to do so in this series. So the Mariners game will be over early. And tonight, we got Jersey Shore. It's Jersey Thursday tonight. Jersey Shore, family vacation, the reunion we have all been waiting for. And it's so funny. I hate reality TV. Let's call it what it is. I don't like reality TV. My girlfriend watches it. I will watch it, but I'm not like invested in it in the way that I am in sitcoms. So I'm not, maybe I shouldn't say I hate it. Hate is too strong a word, but I'm not invested in it. And I don't watch it very much on my own. I watch it never on my own unless it's Jersey Shore. I hated Jersey Shore back in the day. Now, some of you that watch it, I'm probably going to make feel old. Some of you, I'm probably going to make feel young, depending on how young you are. Jersey Shore's first season came out my senior year of high school, the year 2007 and 2008. I was not interested. At that point in my life, I was kind of that punk kid who, if it was popular, I said that I hated it. That song that was always on the radio, I didn't want to listen to. I just railed against anything that was mass popularity. And Jersey Shore was one of those things. So I'm going through the first year of high school. Everyone's talking about this show. I got zero interest in this. And even probably say through season three, I had no interest. I think there were six seasons of the original Jersey Shore, maybe five. But I got into it probably in season four. And from that point on, I was hooked. And we would watch it in college and would become appointment watching. And Matt Verderam from fansided.com, who's our football insider, breaks down tape with us. Probably get mad at me saying this, but he would show up at my dorm and all of us in the suite would just watch Jersey Shore and just laugh at the hilarity that was going on. So been 5 years or whatever since Jersey Shore has been live, and they're all older, and as Ronnie says, they're not a lot wiser. So I'm interested. I am. This is about the only reality TV that I'm going to, that I make an appointment viewing for. Now, it'll be on, and I'll watch the Red Sox too, so I'll have the Red Sox on, and I'll be checking that. And then when the Sox, or when Jersey Shore ends, I'll go to the Sox. I'll be watching the Bruins too, so I might have to tape Jersey Shore, but it will be watched today. I will be watched before bed. If you're in to Jersey Shore and you're excited about it, you can always get in on the Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. As for what's coming up on the show today, Dave Gettleman, he spoke. We'll get into the Patriots and maybe their thought process surrounding quarterbacks. A member of the Milwaukee Bucks speaks out. We'll talk about a debate that we had last week that I'm bringing back to the forefront. And Ian McKay is going to join us. UVM men's lacrosse senior, just drafted in the Major League Lacrosse Draft, 13th overall. That's what's coming up today. But first, yeah, Dave Gettleman spoke today. And I love listening to Dave Gettleman talk. Dave Gettleman's Boston accent is so thick that sometimes you can't even understand him. And Paul Schwartz of the New York Post joined us last week, and he told us that. I'm listening to Dave Gettleman talk, and just I love his Boston accent.
I don't want guys that like to play football. I want guys that hate to lose. That's what I want. I don't want guys that like to play football. I don't want guys that like to play football. I want guys that hate to lose. That's what I want.
There you go. I love listening to Dave Gettleman speak. And I like a lot of what he has to say. Now, I think in some ways his old school nature hurts him, and I think that it has hurt him in the past in the way that it did with the Josh Norman contract situation in Carolina. Dave Gettleman said something interesting today that I wholeheartedly disagree with. Dave Gettleman was talking about running backs, and it's in reference to Saquon Barkley, but he said, we aren't... Gettleman says devaluing of running backs is a myth. It makes your quarterback better, your passing game better. Dave, I agree with what you just said there. I'm not devaluing running backs, but where I am devaluing taking a running back in the top five of the draft. I understand running backs are important. I agree with his sentiment that running backs are a big deal. They do make your quarterback better. They do make your passing game better. A good running back covers up for deficiencies at your offensive line. Nobody has said running backs aren't important, Dave Gettleman. People have said that taking running backs that high up isn't what it used to be. And I'm going to maintain that position. Okay, Alvin Kamara, rookie of the year, third-round pick of the Saints from Tulane. Kareem Hunt, third-round pick, won the rushing title. Kansas City Chiefs from Toledo. So now the offensive rookie of the year and the guy who won the rushing title, they were both third-round picks. Those are good running backs, valuable players that you didn't have to spend top 10 draft capital on. They also came from small schools. Running backs are everywhere. I agree with you. You need a running back. You need a good running back. You need multiple good running backs. But I don't need to do that in the top 10. The Giants are picking at the beginning of every round that they have a pick. Use a draft pick there. Get one in the high third. Get one in the high fourth. Now, the Giants going into the draft only have 6 picks. They're missing a pick in at least one round, but whatever that is. Take a running back there. I want the Giants to take a quarterback. Dave Gettleman's been doing the tape and the research more than me with his staff. If he doesn't feel that there's a home run quarterback there for the future, a guy who can be a decade-long successor to Eli Manning, then he needs to trade the pick. Because taking Saquon Barkley is a mistake. The team has Jonathan Stewart. And I'm not a huge fan of Jonathan Stewart and his 3.3 yards per carry or whatever it was last year in Carolina. But you have a running back. You have other guys on that team already. Give me a good rookie running back taken in the third round or later that can come in and do what Kamara did for New Orleans or do what Kareem Hunt did for Kansas City. Find me that guy. Saquon Barkley undoubtedly to me is probably great in the same way that Ezekiel Elliott is great. And I have said this from day one. Gone, not the importance of the running back is not gone, but the dependence on one running back, that is gone. And it needs to be gone. Look at what happened to Ezekiel Elliott last year. When the Cowboys were relying on him, he's gone 6 games, they lose. And that was it. That was their season. Okay? That was their season. That Saints team where Alvin Kamara shined, Mark Ingram was there. They had multiple running backs. The Eagles team that beat the Patriots in the Super Bowl, multiple backs. From Jay Ajayi to LeGarrette Blount to Corey Clement, all 3 of them. Darren Sproles, Wendell Smallwood on that roster throughout the year. They had 5. Arnie has railed on the Patriots running back use last year. I love it. Last year, James White, Deion Lewis, Rex Burkhead, Mike Gillisley. Give me all 4 of them. Give me all 4 of those guys. And you know what? Those guys, not high draft picks either. Seahawks, done. Decimated when Marshawn Lynch gone. Too reliant. That's how football is now. You need more than one running back. And if you need more than one running back, then I don't need to spend the second pick on the draft. Because the second pick in the draft is somebody who's going to play for me every down. Whether it's an offensive lineman, whether it's going to be a quarterback someday. And Saquon Barkley is not going to do that for me. Whoever plays running back for the Giants is going to split carries with Jonathan Stewart. There's going to be some plays off there. I'm not spending the second pick in the draft on a guy that's a part-time player, even if that part-time player is great. And if I do decide to make him my three down, every down back, well, then I've become so reliant on him that the minute he gets hurt, then I'm completely done because my season is over. Look at what happened to the Cardinals last year. David Johnson, out for the year. Done. Season over. If they had three guys that could shoulder the load, maybe they stay in the race. Maybe they don't finish last in the NFC West or second to last or whatever it was because the 49ers were so bad at the beginning. But that's what happens when you become beholden to one running back. Saquon Barkley is phenomenal, and he will be phenomenal, but he shouldn't be taken by the New York Giants. Dave Gettleman is right. Good running backs matter. But I never said that they didn't. I'm not devaluing the running back position. What I'm devaluing is the idea that I have to get a running back in the top five. And Giant fans who want Saquon Barkley, I don't understand you. Tell me why. Tell me why you want Saquon Barkley if you're a Giant fan. 802-655-6672. Please tell me why. Let me know. Help me understand. Because right now I don't. If I'm the Giants, I see four possible outcomes that could happen in the draft. One, they take a quarterback. I can justify that. If they feel there's a generational talent there to be a guy that is 10 years at the position after Eli Manning, I can justify a quarterback. If they took Bradley Chubb as a defensive end, I could justify that. I may not love it, but I could justify it. This team has won Super Bowls with great pass rushers, whether it was Lawrence Taylor, whether it was Michael Strahan, Osi Omenyiora. The fabric of the Giants is in good defensive line play and getting after the quarterback. I could justify that. If they traded the picks, if they traded the pick for more picks, I could justify that. They only have six picks in the draft. That's the fewest in the draft. They have a lot of holes. Go get more picks. Help picks that will help you now and in the future. Go do that. I could justify that. The one thing I can't justify is them taking Saquon Barkley. It's Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Luke in Burlington. My girlfriend hates Jersey Shore, but I secretly love it, and she's out of town tonight. It looks like my plans have been made for the evening, and this is going to be a good one, Luke, because I think Ronnie, he's going to get dangerously close to cheating on his girlfriend, and she's got a kid on the way. How dare he? And Luke, he keeps talking about Sam. He can't get over her. I'm fascinated. I can't wait to see what happens tonight. Again, Champlain Valley Game Night. My head is spinning from all this draft talk, and I love the draft, and I like build up to the draft too, and I like studying prospects. But in this final week, as the full court press comes on and the disinformation happens, I'll admit it gets a little fatiguing for me. Talk today, the Patriots like Josh Rosen. Could they trade up for him? And then the other side of the coin, if the Patriots draft Josh Rosen, how will Tom Brady feel about that? Will he be looking over his shoulder? Is this a power play by Belichick to show that he is still in control and it's not Brady? I don't really care what it is. If the Patriots draft a quarterback, if they trade up to draft a quarterback, that would be a dumb move. In the same way that the Giants would make a dumb move in my mind drafting Saquon Barkley, if the Patriots trade up for a quarterback, dumb move. They do need Tom Brady's successor. They do not need Tom Brady's successor right away. If Tom Brady wants to play two, look at these rookie contracts. These rookie contracts are 4 years with a player option if you're drafted in the first round. So we'll call it 5 years. If Tom Brady wants to play 3 years, you're telling me that Josh Rosen, Baker Mayfield, somebody is going to be comfortable sitting on the bench for those 3 years, and then I'm only going to get him for two before they get big money, and I don't even know if they can play yet? I'm not doing that. I am drafting a quarterback. And if I'm the Patriots, I draft a quarterback in one of my first four picks I have in the first two rounds. But I'm not giving away picks and giving away assets to go get a guy that I think is going to sit 2 to 3 years. I'm just not doing it. I saw Albert Breer say that maybe they were looking at Luke Falk, the kid from Washington State, the Pac-12's all-time leading passer. We're going to get into him next week. We've got a Washington State insider coming on with us, I think on Tuesday, for Champlain Valley game night. Give me that guy. Give me Mason Rudolph. Give me anybody who I, the kid from Richmond, somebody who I can develop over a couple of years. They don't need to be a finished product now. I'm not trading up for Josh Rosen. I'm not trading up for somebody that's going to sit on the bench for a couple of years. And if Belichick does it despite Brady, then shame on him. Do what's best for the franchise now and in the future. What's best for the franchise now is I need offensive linemen. I need a backup quarterback. I need a defensive back to replace Malcolm Butler. Those are the things that I need. I need a pass rusher. I don't need to give away a bunch of picks to go up and get a guy that might play in 3 years. Champlain Valley Game Night at 101.3 ESPN at 101.3ESPN.com. Ryan on the Town for Tire text line. I think some of that is system fit, but obviously great take as well. Presume he's talking about my take on the Giants and what they should be doing. So thank you, Ryan. Appreciate that. When we come back, good local news. If you're a fan of UVM and you like seeing Catamounts do big things, then you're going to enjoy this one. Ian McKay, UVM senior lacrosse player, leading scorer on a 10-2 Cats team, just drafted 13th overall into Major League Lacrosse last night. He will join us. His reaction to being drafted and his take on the Cats. It's next. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back. Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Going up until 7 o'clock today, so a full show. A lot of full shows this week. And as much as I love having Red Sox play at 7 o'clock because that's good for you, I love getting a full hour of the show because we get some extra time to talk more sports. So 9:20 tonight, Sox and Angels, the pregame show starts. A couple texts coming in on the Town Fair Tire text line. You can always get in 802-655-6672. David says, I agree, Brady. It's a mistake to overvalue running backs in the draft. My draft needs would be the following importance. Quarterback, stud offensive lineman, stud defensive lineman, wide receiver, and then running back. Now, I don't know if that means for the Giants specifically or that's just kind of how he views talent in general for the draft. But for the Giants, I could justify quarterback, D end, or trade. I can't justify running back. Trevor in St. Albans says, I think you're right about this running back in Barkley talk, Brady. There are a lot of running backs highly rated in this draft. The QBs just happen to overshadow them this year. I think that happens every year. Quarterback is the most important position in football. For the most part, if you don't have a good one, you don't have a chance to be successful. There just happens to be a bigger number of quarterbacks this year that we have talking about, maybe 5-6 of them getting possible first-round consideration. All right, though, we told you a good local story. Ian McKay, the Catamount lacrosse team on the men's side is 10-2. 10-2, first time they've gotten 10 wins in a number of years. Ian McKay has never gotten 10 wins. He's a senior now. He's the leading scorer on this Catamount team, but also drafted yesterday in the Major League Lacrosse draft, number 13 overall, goes to the Chesapeake Bayhawks. Ian McKay is with us now on the TikTok Jewelers guest line. Ian, thank you for being with us. Congratulations. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
What did yesterday mean to you when you get the call that you've been drafted?
It's pretty unique and pretty cool experience. To be honest, the MLL wasn't something that was kind of on my radar coming into college. I was just coming looking to play field lacrosse and play lacrosse as long as I could. And, you know, I've been lucky enough to have a successful career here, and it's just an honor. I was actually with a bunch of guys watching, so pretty cool being around a bunch of teammates and everyone getting pretty excited for it.
First Catamount drafted since 2007, so you said it wasn't on the radar when you got to college. Are you definitely going to go and play professional lacrosse when your season ends?
Oh, absolutely. It's been a goal of mine to play professional box lacrosse, and then field coming up and being an option is I'm just trying to play lacrosse in any capacity in any way I can for as long as I can. So the fact that this opportunity has come, I'll definitely be looking to take advantage of it.
One of the things that's unique about lacrosse, and probably unfortunately unique for the players that play it, is that the money is not as ludicrous as your more mainstream sports, baseball, basketball, football, hockey. So people that play pro lacrosse are often playing in multiple different leagues. You mentioned box lacrosse. What's the difference between box lacrosse and field lacrosse?
So box lacrosse is something I grew up playing my whole life. That's how I was introduced to the game. And it's more comparable to hockey in the sense that you're confined within a rink. Basically, just put turf down over the ice, and you can't run away from anything. You're getting hit. It's a bit faster. They have a 30-second shot clock when you're on offense. And it's just a really high-paced, fast, fun game. And then my field is more of a comparison to soccer and football in the sense that you're out on the field, and there's different rules with each game. And in field, you're seeing defensemen using 6-foot-long stick, whereas box lacrosse, everyone's using a short stick. So even though it's classified as lacrosse, the same game, they're pretty different in both respects.
So will you have an opportunity to play professional in both disciplines? Is that something that's an option for you?
Yeah, definitely. It's like I mentioned earlier, box lacrosse has kind of been my first passion and something I've been chasing ever since I started playing the game. And unfortunately, I haven't been able to play box lacrosse the last couple of years just due to dealing with the injury I sustained here at UVM and taking care of that and trying to get as healthy as I can. But in the summers, I play box lacrosse back home in Ontario, and I'll be looking to do that as well as play in the MLL this summer. And just like I said, try to play as long as I can in both leagues.
Ian McKay, UVM men's lacrosse senior standout. Team is 10-2, by the way, going into a matchup this weekend against Virginia, one of the true national powers in the history of lacrosse. He's having a great year as well. 30 goals this season, leads the team. The team is 10-2, as I said. You have never reached 10 wins in your career here until this year. Why the success this season?
I think the group of guys that we have in the locker room this year, we got a pretty special group. And from day, even before day one, the buy-in from our team has been exceptional. We had almost every single guy back a week or two early in the summer to get ready for fall ball. And that's never been done in my time here, and it just goes to show the level of commitment from the group of guys we have and the excitement level that we have. And with fellow captain James Lear, I think him and I and the upperclassmen have done a pretty good job at trying to change the culture here with Coach Vice coming in last year. And it's just been fun. It's been really fun to be a part of. Guys every day are excited to come to practice and get to work, and we have a lot of competition within practice. I think that's been able to better us and help us when it comes to game situations.
You mentioned Coach Fifes. Chris Fifes comes in last year, as you said. He comes from North Carolina. He helped win a national title with the Tar Heels. What has he meant to part of that culture changing for you guys?
He's been huge. He's kind of the main reason why we've tried to have this change and shift in our culture. Coming into a program that he came into a unique situation where we had come off a appearance in the American East Finals, and it's not like a team that necessarily needed to be rebuilt or anything like that, but there was definitely some changes that had to be made culture-wise, and he's kind of spearheaded that, and also gave us a lot of leeway and ability to kind of take that in the direction we want. And I think last year was a good stepping stone as far as kind of understanding really how much we have to buy in and what it takes to buy in and be a championship caliber program. And I think this year has been an even bigger step. And I think our record kind of goes to show for it and how we've been, have the success that we've had going into this year. So
individually for you, you were America East Offensive Player of the Year in 2016, and that is certainly no small feat. When you look at the firepower in this conference, I mean, Albany was number one in the country at the time that you played them, so they can perennially have players kind of in the mix for that. You redshirted all of last season, sat out. I have to imagine that's because of the injury you referred to. How difficult was it for you to not be on the field last year?
It was tough. It was definitely really tough, and it's the first time that I've ever had to sit out for an extended period of time due to an injury. Usually it's just kind of your typical bumps and bruises that you're able to play through, but this was something that was kind of on my plate for a couple of years and something that I tried to prolong as long as I could, and it got to a point where I had to do something about it. But it also gave me a different understanding and respect for the game. Not being able to play and having it taken away from you for the time I did, and having to stand on the sidelines or be up in the press box watching, really gave me a different view of the game, especially my teammates too, being able to watch some guys play. A guy like Rob Hudson, who was a freshman last year, and someone I wasn't able to play with, I got to watch first before I ever really got a chance to play with them in a game. And you see and learn about a lot of guys and their tendencies and how the offense flows and that kind of thing. And I think I've been able to really learn from that and bring that to my game this year.
Ian McKay, UVM senior lacrosse standout, drafted yesterday, 13th overall Major League Lacrosse draft. He's got 30 goals this season. What can this team accomplish moving forward?
Yeah, I really think the sky's the limit for us. You know, we kind of have an us against the world mentality, and we like to focus on us and the 50-plus guys that we have in our locker room. We come out every day just excited and eager to learn and work and have fun. And I think just having that mindset and playing the games that we've had and going through the ups and downs with having the hot start that we did and then the loss to Albany and then kind of on a little bit of a run again and then suffering the loss to Stony Brook this weekend, it's been a lot of ups and downs, like I said, and some good learning curves. And I think that going into the last few games here and hopefully into America East play, we can take what we've learned and run with it and see how long that we can keep this thing going.
Ian, I played college baseball, and I went to a school where hockey was the dominant sport, not even by a little bit. It was by a long shot, and then basketball came next, and nobody ever talked about us. And that always bothered me. I don't know that it bothers every athlete that's in that situation, but how nice is it for you guys to put UVM lacrosse on the map and get people talking about something other than hockey and basketball on campus?
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, hockey and basketball here have been the powerhouse for quite some time, and they've you look at basketball success, not just the last few years, but the last 10-plus years, they've been an amazing team, as well as hockey, competing in the best conference in college hockey. And it's always been a goal of ours, just, like I said, kind of worried about ourselves. But at the same time, you definitely want to be noticed and be seen a little bit more. And I think as we've kind of gained the success that we've had, see the crowd fill up a little more. Limited home games that we do have, but it's just fun. We just, like I said, kind of try to focus on ourselves and worry about ourselves, and everything else that comes with it's just added bonus.
Ian, we'll get you out of here on this. The Major League Lacrosse season actually starts this weekend, so you won't even join your team until hopefully later in May or June, because that means the Catamounts are playing longer. But when you graduate from UVM and you leave this program, what are you going to miss most about being a Catamount? What are you going to miss most about Burlington in general?
I mean, just being with the guys every day. College athletics at any sport or any division gives you the opportunity to gain some of the best friends you'll ever have. And I've been lucky enough to be here for 5 years and meet a lot of guys and get to spend a couple hours with them every day, whether it's on the field, in the locker room, in the weight room, on the bus, whatever it may be, right? So just waking up and not having a locker room to go to every day or seeing the same guys every day is going to be something that I'll definitely miss. And I mean, Burlington, one of the main reasons why I came to Vermont, and such a beautiful place, and the community is awesome here, and everyone's so friendly and so open and welcoming, and those are just a couple things I'll miss for sure.
Ian McKay, UVM senior lacrosse standout, 30 goals this year, leads the team, drafted yesterday, 13th overall in the Major League Lacrosse draft. Catamounts are 10-2. They take the field this weekend. Ian, continued success to your team. Congratulations personally, and we'll talk to you again down the road.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you having me on.
Appreciate you coming on as well. Ian McKay, there he goes, 13th overall. And what's cool is that his assistant coach, Jake Bernhardt, who we had on January or so, maybe February at this point, he plays in that league also. He's on a different team. He's on Ohio, but his brother is also in the league. So there's going to be a couple different UVM connections in Major League Lacrosse, and that's what is so tough about Major League Lacrosse, is that the money, it really isn't there. Guys have other jobs. Guys are coaches in one season and playing in another. It's very, very difficult, and that's why. And I heard an interview with a player at North Carolina recently who said that They didn't want to play pro lacrosse because the money opportunities weren't great. But it was an honor for Ian McKay. He's the highest drafted Catamount since 2007. So very, very cool local story. It's Champlain Valley Game Night here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. This is breaking news right now. We're headed for Game 4 of the Bruins and Maple Leafs. Coverage starts. The pregame show has started over on 960 The Zone. Patrice Bergeron will not play tonight. Will not play tonight for the Bruins. 802-655-6672. How big a loss is that for Boston? I mean, that's the Bruins' top line, one of the top lines in hockey. Marchand, Pasternak, and Bergeron. And now Bergeron, who may be the best player on the ice every time he takes it for Boston, he will not play. He's listed as day-to-day upper body injury. Who knows what that means, because hockey teams will say anything, and it could be anything else. But Patrice Bergeron will not take the ice tonight for the Bruins as they take on the Leafs in Game 4. You know, and sticking with the Bruins and sticking with the Bergeron line, there was a fascinating article today in the Players Tribune by Brad Marchand. And Brad Marchand talked about his reputation as being a dirty player. He talked about his love of Boston. He talked about winning the Cup back in 2011. He talked about this team. It was fascinating. And as somebody who is not a diehard hockey fan, and I am doing my best to make myself a big hockey fan. I'm doing my best to make sure that I bring you all the relevant information. I am trying my best to engage with hockey like a lot of you do. But I'm coming at this is that I have no preconceived notion about Brad Marchand. I couldn't tell you that I love him because he scores a bunch of goals. I couldn't tell you that I hate him because he's a dirty player. I just look at each game on an individual basis, and I know his reputation. I walked away from this article in the Players Tribune liking him a little more, or being inclined to like him a little more. This article was very, very introspective. He wrote it. He talked about his love for Patrice Bergeron, what it's like playing with him, how he knows that Bergeron is the best player on the ice every time he takes it, and it's his goal to always be the second best player on the ice. That is what he shoots for, is to always be the second best player, because he knows that Bergeron is the best. He also talked about growing up, where he developed that edge. And I thought it was fascinating because it's relatable to a lot of kids that are told this. And this is right. He had a youth hockey coach who told him and said that there are 1,000 kids like you, like his team. He was talking to a team, not just Marchand, but said there are 1,000 kids in Canada, thousands of kids in Canada just like you, playing at this point, maybe he's 13 years old or something like that. And he said now there's millions more kids around the world. So the odds of you making it to the NHL are, you know, 0.00001. So work on your schoolwork, all that kind of stuff. And that's right, right? That's what most coaches say. The odds of you getting to a professional sport are very, very slim. And they're almost slim in none. So Marchand takes that information and he said, okay, maybe I'll just get to play college hockey. And then he kind of acted as an enforcer type on one play. He said the light went off. If I have a 0.01 chance, this may be the only way of getting people to notice me. I know there's a lot of people who don't like it, and I'll be the first to tell you it's a fine line. I have done things that have stepped over the line, and I paid the price for it. But you know what? There's a lot of people out there in hockey who say winning isn't everything. It's the only thing. But do they really mean it? How far are they willing to go? Maybe it was my size or just the way I was born, but I've always felt like you have to be willing to do anything, literally anything, in order to win, even if that means being hated, even if it means carrying around some baggage. You don't have to like Brad Marchand, but he was honest, and I like that. People do say winning is everything. Are you willing to do everything that it takes to win? And maybe Brad Marchand is that guy. Maybe he deserves our respect a little bit more. Bruin fans, I know, or Bruin haters, I know you're going to hate him, and I get that. I dealt with it. I defended Richard Sherman in Seattle, and people around me who weren't Seahawks fans hated him. I totally get it. But maybe Brad Marchand does deserve a little bit of respect because he is, in his words, willing to do everything, willing to do things that maybe not everyone else is doing. And if score goals, great. If it's get under someone's skin, then great. Whatever helps the Bruins win. Brad Marchand, that was in the Players Tribune. Love the Players Tribune because the media often gets blamed for spinning stories. Well, the Players Tribune allows the players to create their own story and spin their own story, and then we get to react to it. And I like that too. But Patrice Bergeron not playing tonight for the Bruins, game four against the Maple Leafs. When we come back, a really interesting debate we had last week that I've been sitting on to bring back. I'm going to bring it back next. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
Final segment, Champlain Valley Game Night on a Thursday. One step closer to Friday, a couple minutes closer to Jersey Shore tonight. So Jersey Shore tonight, Bruins hockey tonight. Patrice Bergeron not playing. That is breaking news from the team. Trevor in St. Albans says that's a massive loss. Hopefully Riley Nash can fit in well like he did in the 4 weeks that Bergeron was out earlier in the year. And Riley Nash is on that top line with David Pastrnak and Brad Marchand. So that is 7 o'clock for the puck drop over on 960 The Zone. We'll get to the Red Sox and Angels lineups in about 6 minutes as that coverage starts at 920 right here on 101.3 ESPN. But first, this is something that we talked about last week, and I've been sitting on it, trying to bring it back, and this is the day, too. Homegrown players get a far longer leash than imported players. And look at the fan bases. I'll stick with baseball in particular because of the just how long the building process is. Look at the Yankees first. Yankee fans are crushing Giancarlo Stanton, and maybe deservedly so. 3-for-35 at home so far. He has really struggled. If that had been a homegrown player, that wouldn't be the reaction. That's what I'm telling you. Because baseball prospects in particular, if they are signed internationally and they're signed at 16, we know who they are and we're following them for 4, 5, 6 years. By the time they get to the majors and by the time the hype machine has been built on these guys, we're under the impression that they can do no wrong. They'll figure it out. We've seen what they could do with the minors, and we just believe, and we want to believe because we've put in so much time into learning about these prospects, where they come from, what their stats are, following their stats, drafting them on your fantasy teams and storing them in your minor league system. We have spent time cultivating. That's a relationship between fan and player. Brett Gardner is a guy, I have only seen him get booed one time by Yankee fans, and I thought it was inexplicable. It was the wild card game maybe 4 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago, when they played Houston at home and they lost, and Dallas Keuchel pitched against Masahiro Tanaka. Brett Gardner got booed in that game, and I thought it was disgusting what Yankee fans did. For Brett Gardner, he gets a really long leash to do anything. Why? Homegrown. We've grown up with him. We developed him. The organization developed him. So that is Aaron Judge struck out in a major league record 30-plus games last year. Yankee fans think that Aaron Judge can do no wrong. Aaron Judge strikes out a lot. He led the league in strikeouts last year. Giancarlo Stanton, an import, strikes out a ton, and people are booing him out of the stadium. Again, he has been awful. But if that were Aaron Judge, he wouldn't be getting booed. He wouldn't. And you know that, too. Yankee fans might get on Sonny Gray because he's an import and he's supposed to be a difference maker immediately. They're not getting on Jordan Montgomery like that. Yankee fans will get on Aroldis Chapman if he was struggling, import. They wouldn't get on David Robertson, came up through the system. Look at the Red Sox. J.D. Martinez is playing well now, and the team is playing well. But if J.D. Martinez was hitting .220 and this team was 7-10 instead of 15-2, he'd be hearing it. You know who wouldn't be hearing it? Andrew Benintendi, Mookie Betts, Xander Bogaerts. They wouldn't be getting booed because we've put in time and energy into following them. We've put in time and energy into learning about them and understanding them. And we feel a deep connection with them. You don't feel a connection with Pablo Sandoval. You don't feel a connection with J.D. Martinez. You don't feel a connection with David Price. you don't feel those connections because those relationships haven't been built and nurtured for years and years and years. And that is why homegrown players get far longer leashes than imported players. It's something we talked about last week, and Arnie didn't believe me. I 1,000% believe that. I'm a Mariners fan. Kyle Seager is the only prospect that we've brought in for a long time that the Mariners have brought in. He can do no wrong to me. I will always say that I want Kyle Seager up. I will always say that I like Kyle Seager, but that guy who was acquired at the trade deadline who has the same numbers, that guy's a bum. They could have the same numbers, but the guy that we developed, that's okay. The guy that we didn't develop, not okay. 802-655-6672. Chris from the Green City Garage says he would boo Jackie Bradley Jr., who's a cultivated Red Sox. I don't think too many people are booing JBJ either. I'd promise you this. If Jackie Bradley Jr. and JD Martinez had the exact same numbers, JD Martinez would get it way worse because he's an import. Now, a little more is expected of him, obviously. I get that. But the difference between being a cultivated player and a brought-in hired gun, there is a big difference there. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN at 101.3ESPN.com. Real quick, Jabari Parker of the Milwaukee Bucks, not happy about his playing time. Bucks are down 0-2. I hate saying that. They're down 2-0 to the Boston Celtics. Game 3 is tomorrow. Jabari Parker complaining about his playing time. Giannis Antetokounmpo and Jason Terry and Chris Middleton, some leaders on that team. The best players in Antetokounmpo and Middleton need to get together. And Terry, the veteran on that team, need to get together. And they need to right the ship. Because look, I'm rooting for the Celtics. If the Celtics sweep, then great. That's as far as I'm concerned. But we'd also like to see a competitive series, and I don't want to see infighting in Milwaukee cause it to be even less competitive than it has been to this point. We'll get you those Red Sox lineups right now. They're taking on the Angels in Anaheim. 9:20 is the pregame show right here on 101.3 ESPN. But the lineups are out. Pitching matchup is Eduardo Rodriguez. He's 1-0 with a 3.72 ERA. Pitches for the first time in Anaheim since 2015. That was not a good memory for him. He gave up 6 hits and 7 runs in less than 2 innings. His last time out, though, this year, he allowed just 1 run over 6 innings with 8 strikeouts. He's approached by Nick Tropiano. Angels pitcher is 1-0, made 1 start, perfect 0 ERA, struck out 6 in his last time out against the Royals. Lineups behind Rodriguez, Mookie Betts is in right. Andrew Benintendi hits second and plays center. Jackie Bradley Jr., he is out of the lineup today. Hanley Ramirez hits third at DH. JD Martinez hits fourth in left. Mitch Moreland hits fifth and plays first. Rafael Devers hits sixth. He's at third. Eduardo Nunez hits seventh. He's at second, 268. Christian Vasquez is the catcher hitting eighth. And Brock Holt is at shortstop hitting ninth with 1 homer and 4 RBIs. The defense behind Tropiano for the Angels, Ian Kinsler's at second. Mike Trout is in center. Justin Upton in left. Albert Pujols is at first. Andrelton Simmons, the slick fielding shortstop, is at shortstop. Shohei Ohtani back in the lineup. 3 homers, 11 RBIs on the year, hitting 367. He hits sixth. Zach Cozart, he plays third and hits seventh. Chris Young, the former Red Sox, he hits eighth and plays right. And Martin Maldonado, he is the catcher, hitting ninth. No homers and 6 RBIs. That will do it for us today. Bruins hockey coming up over on 960 The Zone. Again, pregame show continuing now. We'll end shortly. We'll just get the puck drop just after 7. Red Sox baseball first pitch is just after 10. Sox will go to Oakland tomorrow, and we should see Drew Pomeranz make that start for the Sox against his former team. For intern Nathan, for intern Alec, for Rich and Arnie, in the huddle as well, I am Brady. Bruins will go over their game 4 tomorrow. We'll talk a little bit more about the NFL schedule, things that we notice, what people say about the Giants and the Patriots. All that is next tomorrow here on the Huddle in Champlain Valley Game Night on Friday, 101.3 ESPN.